Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas so that you can save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. And you can follow me at facebook.com/Clark Howard. Coming up later in today's Clark Rage, I have a special warning for you about allowing any company to draft your checking account. And yet later, there is a market share fight going on in the supermarket aisle that is a battle royale, and you are the winner. I want to tell you what changes are taking place that are going to save you money. Speaking of saving money, we have with us Sally, who is our newsletter editor extraordinaire for our newsletter products we have at Clark.com, ClarkDeals.com. And Sally, you are on the hot seat today.
Thanks for having me, Clark. Love the hot seat.
So there's a new study out that says that millennials, half of them, are spending more on eating out than saving for retirement. It also finds that nearly 40% of millennials are not saving a single penny. And the money people are spending on things as millennials is, well, it's pretty interesting where the money's going. And a lot of it is going to things that are nice to do, but not have to do's. So I have heard through the grapevine that you eat out every meal of your life. Is this a true statement?
Well, it is fairly accurate. My husband and I love to go out to eat. It's something we really enjoy doing. It's a way for us to get out of the house and enjoy lovely food from people who enjoy cooking food, which is not us. And so it is a part of our budget and part of how we love to spend our money.
So the average millennial is spending $163 a month eating out. I'd imagine if you and your husband are eating out 80 meals a month, that you're spending a fair amount more than $163.
We do spend a lot of our extra money that we have left over on eating out because it's something we enjoy, and it saves me time from planning meals or going to the grocery store. And quite frankly, I'm just not a good cook, so it's not very fun.
Well, I want to ask you something that might not be pleasant for me to bring up to discuss with you. So you said part of your budget and your extra money. So I'm really coming on to you pretty hard with the whole guilt trip thing here. So what are the two of you doing to save for retirement?
Both of our employers offer a match. So we are both doing a full contribution to our retirement funds through our employer. And then we're also working on setting aside a significant amount of money to put in our regular savings account so we can have a really strong base for emergency savings. That's something we've really been focusing on this year. We could certainly do more, but eating out is just so fun.
So wait. So I'm picking on you unfairly and unnecessarily because you have chosen within your budget as a lifestyle choice to eat out pretty much all your meals, but you're still saving 15% of your pay in a 401k?
That's correct.
And your husband is too?
Yes.
And you each have a match?
Yes.
Wow, what kind of match do each of you have?
I have a great match at 6%. And he, I believe, also has a 6% match.
So you're saving effectively each of you more than 20% of your pay?
Yes, and we're hoping this year to, my husband is a teacher, so he has a 403b plan, so we're hoping to get him a Roth 401k this year so he can save even more in a better plan for him.
So you know that I never went to law school, right?
Right.
And one proof of that is no lawyer ever asks a question that he or she doesn't already know the answer to. So I had jumped to a conclusion when I heard that you ate out all your meals, and we'd been talking about this, that you were one of these 40% that wasn't saving any money at all, and you're saving like a maniac.
I think what's important with studies like these is now it's given me a reality check in that I need to look at exactly how much we're spending, but we are also saving for retirement, so we're not the full statistic of millennials, which...
No, you're doing... I mean, if you're saving 15% plus getting a 6% employer match, by the way, for me, you get 7%, not 6.
Oh.
So you're saving 22%. Your husband's saving 21%. But anyway... It's great, and I apologize for thinking that you were one of the stats, and keep doing exactly what you're doing.
Thanks, Clark.
But I want you to think about it, now that Sally has made me look like a jerk, I want you to think about the reality. Are you budgeting, if you will use that term like Sally did, are you budgeting for retirement? Are you putting money aside to build your future? Or are you just living in the present? I mean, the list of things in this survey of what people are spending money on not saving for retirement was quite interesting. And a lot of the things that people are spending money on that just kind of fritters away each week are things that if somebody was asked, well, would it be better to spend money on this or put it towards retirement? In isolation, people would automatically say for retirement. But in what people are actually doing, they're spending the money on various things that are not going to matter to them after that day has passed, but retirement eventually comes. Daniel's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Clark.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Great, thank you. So you got something going on with your 401k you wanted to run by me.
Yeah, so My employer currently has a company that I really like for a 401k, and they, out of the blue, at least to me, they sent notification that they're changing to a new company that I'd never heard of before. And I've got the option to just not do nothing and let them roll everything over, or I can keep my current investments where they are by opening an individual one and transferring, and then just do the new stuff at the new place. I wanted to get your take on it.
Well, the company that they're moving you to has not the greatest satisfaction from people. And they've been sued a number of times, according to trade journals, for having massive fees in 401k plans. I'm curious.
That was kind of the impression I had.
I'm curious with your employer moving from a low-cost provider to an ultra high cost provider, are you at a very small employer?
No, we have, it's a big corporation with a lot of individual companies, I don't know, several thousand employees.
So somebody may have made a mistake. Let's leave it at that, because
yeah,
it makes no sense. Many times smaller businesses won't know where to turn, won't know exactly what to do. And it's harder for a small business to find a low-cost plan anyway. And so the small businesses face a Herculean task. But a big company, it's very easy to provide employees with a low-cost plan. And this is a very odd, curious switch. What I would recommend to you in this case is for you to reduce your contribution to the employer 401k to the point that you pull the full employer match, if they're going to have one, do they?
Yeah, I'm currently doing that plus a little more.
So I would not do plus a little more anymore.
Okay.
Do only up to the match, and then I would set up your own IRA, Roth IRA, with one of the low-cost companies, like who I see used to handle your 401k plan.
Yeah, I'm hoping to max out a Roth and then maybe a little bit. So any extra that would be too much for a Roth, just put it in the other one, even if it's more than the match, or do something else.
Boy, that's tough because, you know, if you're going to a high-cost provider, it becomes somewhat troublesome to put money in the 401k plan beyond what you need to grab the full employer match. So look through the the plan documents for the new plan, they now have to disclose to you what the fees are. And if there are any ultra low cost choices, like any index funds that have really a low, low fee, which would be something, an index fund should be below 0.25 of 1%.
Okay.
The ones you probably had with a large employer have been less than 1/10 of 1%. But at least if you can get them below 0.25, then any extra money put in an ultra low cost index fund.
Now, they sent in the plan document or the changeover documents that they sent, they have a list of 6 or 7 funds that are available at both the old and the new. And most of them have the name of the old provider on them. And supposedly they have a lower expense ratio with the new provider.
Okay, so the deal with this company is what they charge in overall administrative fees.
Okay.
That's the problem, is it's not the fund fees. It's what they're being sued about is that they're charging massive administrative costs.
Okay.
If you just Google them and put some unfriendly word by it, just put the company name and say scam or ripoff or whatever, or even just put their name, you'll see endless things that people have said in great anger about them as a 401k administrator.
Okay.
It takes a lot for people to really get fired up about who administers their 401k. And if people have taken the time to write all these things and file all these complaints, and for there to be the lawsuits, I can tell you they're trouble.
Okay. So I should contact my current provider and have them step me through how to change that over to an individual account?
No, the money you already have, you have to leave with the employer 401k usually. If they offer you an option to rotate it out, what you've already contributed, you want to and do an IRA with the low-cost provider.
Okay.
And then set up your own separate Roth IRA for the money you're going to contribute current year and future years.
Okay.
And what a curious thing. I don't remember hearing a situation with a large employer going to an ultra-high-cost provider. The only time I ever really see that is when a company feels intimidated or forced to move their 401k to the brokerage arm of a big bank they're using for a loan or a loan syndication, and they stick it to their own employees by going to a crummy 401k with a bank in return for trying to make the bank happy so the bank will do the lending that the business wants. The employees, though, should always come first.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
It's time for today's Clark Rageous Moment, and this is a special warning for you about how to handle your wallet and how to handle the bills that you owe.
Scams, rip-offs, outrages. It's a Clark Rageous Moment.
I want to warn you about a problem that just came up. Is that yesterday or day before yesterday? Gentleman stopped me who was very animated and very angry about a health club that he was a member of, that he ended his membership, but they were still drafting his checking account. And this is a problem that happens again and again when you allow an auto debit for a car loan, for any kind of product or service, when you give permission for any place to go into your checking account and take whatever they want through ACH, Automated Clearinghouse, you need to know that your rights under the law are pathetic. That when a business or any organization takes money that way, it is a real chore, a real hard thing, and many times you will never be able to get your money back. So if you want the convenience of making sure that bills get paid on time, set up where you're in charge, where you set up to automatically pay each month on a credit card, because you have a whole bunch of rights if a business does a charge against a credit card that they shouldn't have done. Or you use your own bill pay through your credit union or bank, where you're controlling the payments that go. You set it up automatically, but you're the boss. When you quit some service or whatever, or you've made the last payment on a loan or something like that, you go into your bill pay and you discontinue paying. The problem with the drafting, with the ACH, because you have virtually no rights, is that if money is taken either by mistake or on purpose, it is extremely difficult to get that money ever refunded and returned to you, and nobody is looking out for you. So use the ability you have to protect yourself by you always being in charge of the payments you make and how they're made. Because otherwise, you'll be calling me and saying, what do I do? Hey, Joel, I think we have time to sneak in and ask Clark here.
Yeah, Clark, we do. Gil wrote in and said, I'm shopping for a new home security system right now. I pay $48 a month.
No, you don't.
Mm-hmm. So he says, which company do you recommend that will do the installation of a new system and offer a better price for monitoring?
Well, you may or may not need a new system. You may only need a new monitoring company. If you own the equipment in your home, there are many companies that will monitor an alarm for between $10 and $20 a month. They just take it over. But today, if that's not going to work for you, there are a zillion companies that will monitor for you and provide equipment as well that you self-install at very, very low cost. I've got a list of many of those choices at Clark.com. Your wallet is so smiling on you when you go to buy groceries. It's fantastic. I'm glad to welcome you here to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. And you can follow me at facebook.com/Clark Howard. The supermarket business is going through the greatest turmoil it's faced in the 100 years that supermarkets have been part of people's lives. And the industry is being disrupted by what might be considered to be outside players. And when you listen to CEOs of supermarkets talk to Wall Street analysts or read what they have to say, it's the dull kind of stuff I do. One thing comes up again and again is that they're not competing against each other anymore. They're competing against the disruptors. And there are three major disruptors now in the supermarket business. And they're Costco Wholesale, Sam's Club, and Aldi. But none of them is growing as fast as Aldi. Aldi is opening hundreds and hundreds of new stores in the United States. They're planning to open more than 100 every year through 2022. They have 2,500 locations in the country. But more important, they're spending $5 billion to make their stores, their legacy stores, not look so depressing. I mean, Aldi, let's face it, if you've ever been in an Aldi, they're not exactly a store that's going to put a smile on your face. They're very, very basic, almost like miniaturized warehouses. But the new Aldi looks like something very upscale. Think kind of like Whole Foods or Sprouts. And speaking of that, the organic sellers, your supermarkets that specialize in organic, like Whole Foods or anybody like that, is facing a direct, significant, serious threat from Aldi, which is changing their product mix and going very heavily into organics. They're increasing the number of those by a big amount, and they're going heavily into fresh food. Now, the reason that's significant to you is Aldi structurally is run so simply that their prices are typically 40% cheaper than you're going to find at a traditional supermarket. And then you start lining up their organics versus what organics cost at Whole Foods. And even if you look at the 365s, Whole Foods private label, going against private label Aldi, it's not even a contest. It's like a TKO without any of the boxers getting in the ring. So what's going on with the huge amount of organics being sold at Costco, if that's what you're into, to a lesser extent Sam's Club, and very heavily at Aldi, this is so to your benefit if you like buying organics. If you just like regular groceries, it was already to your benefit. And the proof is in the pudding, because the market share of supermarkets is steadily going down. Aldi's up to $15 billion in sales, according to the industry sources, 15% increase in just a year, and they're outgrowing everybody in the market. So if you're someone who has not looked at the alternatives when you're looking to shop, there's so many choices now. And even the nation's two largest supermarket chains, Walmart and Kroger, Kroger uses many different names around the country, they are both losing market share right now to the two warehouse clubs and to Aldi. So the opportunity for you to save is great. And if you live in Virginia or the Carolinas, Lidl, L-I-D-L, Lidl has set off the greatest price war on groceries probably ever seen in the United States, because all the national supermarket operators may look at Aldi as a pest. They are terrified of their German rival Lidl, which has come in with a big presence in those three states, but stretches from New Jersey to Georgia right now and plans ultimately to roll out across the country. If you notice heavier promotions and heavier discounting in groceries, know that it's likely because the fear the traditional players have of the new choices to save you money. Jill joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Clark. How are you today?
Great, thank you. Jill, tell me about your daughter.
Well, I think we have similar daughters in the sense that they're both going off to college this year, and they both have peanut allergies. My daughter has a life-threatening peanut allergy, and we started the process about 18 months ago in trying to find the best college and the best fit for her. And I thought I was doing the right things by going through the right channels at the university that she picked. And come to find out, we're, 10 days from move-in date, and they're being inflexible in regards to the dining plan is kind of how I would see it. We thought she would be able to go to the dining hall, but when she got there for orientation, it was obvious that there was a lot of opportunity for cross-contamination. And so in the couple of days she was there for orientation, she kind of grabbed a banana and one other thing from there and thought, I need to do something else. So I've asked to be exempt from that dining plan, and they're saying, no, she's not allowed to be exempt. If
okay.
She's in...
We got to talk here, because we got a similar thing going on with my daughter, in that for her housing assignment,
yep,
she had requested that she be with roommates that had food allergies as well, or roommates, yep, that would agree to have no peanut products in the dorm room, because, those dorm rooms, you're on top,
yep,
of each other. And she got lost in the shuffle, and she's with two roommates, both of whom she's communicated with on social media, both of whom nut products are a very important part of their diets. And right. So now, and we've got her advocating for herself. She's been working with the school to try to get a different housing assignment, and we're in countdown to going as well and have a similar issue. So on the food side, what I would do is get outside the bureaucracy of the school and send a letter to the chairman of the Board of Trustees.
Okay.
And it's an obvious thing that no school in what goes back, it's Latin or Greek, and loco parentis, you know, no school is ever supposed to put a student in life and death danger. And it's an old legal concept. And the school, by being careless, is doing exactly that with your daughter. And it is a proper thing that if they can't provide a safe environment for her, and people aren't aware, your daughter and mine can die almost immediately from being exposed to cross-contaminated nut or peanut products. And it's one of those things people roll their eyes. Where'd they get a rash or something? They don't get it. There's anaphylactic shock and instant death. And so it's possible that the administrators at the school don't get the life and death aspect of it either. So I had never heard of the allergy till our child almost died one day from it. And I get how dangerous it is. So I would, if you're going to advocate for her, or she should be advocating for herself as well, I would find out who the chairman of the board is, and that's who I would immediately contact.
Okay.
Get outside the bureaucrats. What's that?
Because I've been working with like the directors of dining, and they're simply saying, well, it's really up to the director of housing.
Yeah. Again, bureaucratic mumbo jumbo. And they don't care if your kid doesn't live. They don't care about that. You're the one who has to care. Your daughter has to care about herself. And that's why you go outside the bureaucracy and you make it known. I don't see anything wrong with calling the president of the university.
Okay. Were there any other advice that you have as your daughter goes off?
Well, I mean, if your daughter's 18 or 19 and has lived with us how long?
About 16 years.
Yeah. So just like, you know, my daughter was almost died at 2. So we've been fully aware of it. Her allergy has not lessened. You know, we do the tests over time. It hadn't lessened. And so I feel like at their age, they're good at protecting themselves.
Okay.
And they're not going to, you know, at late teen, they know the drill and they know the risk.
Yeah.
And making sure she's always got two EpiPens that are in date is important, but you don't want to have to use those. You want to use your good judgment to avoid any situation where you might die. My daughter can't even go to a baseball game.
Nope, nor can ours.
Yeah. So
there is no baseball in our our household.
Right. But time's important here as soon as she's
because
going.
People don't understand.
And how could they? I mean, why would anybody understand?
Right.
Because if they haven't experienced it firsthand, there's no way. So it's not like we should be mad at other people for not caring. They don't know how important it is. That's why we've got to let them know.
Right.
Hey, let me know, follow up with me, let me know how it plays out when you start reaching outside the normal channels.
Okay, I will do that.
All right, best of luck.
Thank you, Clark.
And wow, what a strange thing that it's exactly something that we're going through parallel playing here, but it's not funny playing at all. George is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, George.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great, thank you, George.
I want to thank you for the show. It's been very pleasure listening to you. With you, I'm able to understand better some personal finance and being able to know that having credit is very important. So I want to thank you for that.
Certainly.
Okay. My question, Clark, is I have a pretty large bill of student loan currently, and paying this monthly is the bill is pretty stiff, and I've been on and off deferment. But I lost my job.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. I lost my job a few months ago, and I was wondering, is it wise to take, because I have a pretty good amount of money in my 401k that I'm getting ready to roll over into a Fidelity IRA, and I was thinking, is it wise to take that money and pay off a student loan?
Wow. Gosh, that's a tough one. Because if you take the money out of the 401k, instead of putting it in the IRA you were going to do, you suffer tax on it and a 10% federal penalty. So the tax consequences are severe. Usually the tax and penalties will add up to around 46% of the amount of money. No, that wouldn't be true anymore. It's 44% of the amount of money. So that means for every dollar you would take out of the 401k, you no longer have it for retirement, and that dollar becomes reduced to 56 cents going towards the student loans. So it's a very harsh way to get rid of the student loan debt.
Okay.
Now, let's see if there's any reason that would make sense. What interest rate do your student loans carry?
4.125.
No, then it would not make sense. And they're at 4.125 fixed, they're federal student loans?
Correct.
Yeah. So the feds will work with you when you do have a period of unemployment or lower income. You can go into the various income-based repayment offers, and that would be a better idea than liquidating that 401k to get rid of a federal student loan where you have so many borrower rights and a fixed rate that's so favorable. Have you been able to find another job yet, George?
I'm still looking. We'll see what happens.
Well, let me encourage you that the job market is very strong right now. There are a lot of openings, and just stick to it, stay out there. And let's hope you find another great opportunity.
Thank you.
I wish you the best. Amir joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Amir. How are you?
How are you doing?
Great. Thank you. Amir, you want to talk about something no one's asked me about in at least a year, and it involves solar panels.
Yes, that's right.
What are you curious about?
So I was wondering if I can get your opinion on Tesla solar panel lease, and does it worth it for the long-term contracts?
Well, I don't like any of the solar leases because you're creating an obligation that if you ever plan to sell your home, often it can mess up the sale of your home because you have that existing lease at your home. I like for you, if you're going to get solar, to buy the stuff. But the thing no one's asked me about in a year, because I do get calls about solar panels, is the Tesla solar, where it's just the coolest looking thing ever, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you're not aware of what Amir and I are talking about, Tesla has these roof shingles that look pretty much like any other roof on a house, but they are actually solar panels. And so it's incorporated in the design of the house, and it just looks like any other roof in the neighborhood, except it's killing off your energy bill for your home. Let me tell you what the problem's been so far, Amir, is that the cost of the Tesla solar panels, anything I've read at all, that it's far more expensive to put solar on your house with Tesla shingles than it is with traditional solar panels. So it's got to be something you want to do because of the aesthetics of having the shingles instead of having the traditional panels. Have you gotten quotes from people on traditional solar panels for your home?
Yeah, usually it goes from $25,000 to $30,000.
Okay. And then you got the 30% federal tax credit. You know, until Tesla gets the economics right, if you do want to do solar, I think it's better to do traditional and let the early adopters who want to do it just because it's cool put on the Tesla solar tiles on their roofs, and then the rest of us will get it when it's affordable. You're listening to the Clark Howard Show. I want you to know that I appreciate so much that you've just tuned into our podcast, that you had faith in the information and advice you get. You want more information from us? One of the best ways to get Clark Smart is with our free newsletters, Clark Daily, Clark Deals, and Travel Escape. Sign up now. You'll be able to unsubscribe at any time if you think I'm wasting your time. Go to clark.com/newsletters.